Genesis 37. Would you read?
Where?
26 to 36.
36.
Genesis 37.
And Judah acknowledged them and said,
wait a minute.
What? That's a bad Bible.
Really?
Yeah.
God, so where you
chapter 37.
Yeah, when somebody acknowledges verse 26.
And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh, and his brethren were content.
Right. You understand what's going on there?
This is King James. Weird.
You understand the transaction?
Well, yeah, it's a double good thing. That not only do they not murder him, but they get some cash.
Wait, it's good, Daryl.
This is a direct descendant from Bob Tilt. Right here. Let's do it.
So they are able to turn getting rid of their brother into profit.
You really are unspiritual right now, dear.
You can go my Bible study.
What is she doing?
I don't know.
It's a comparative analysis. Excuse me.
Then they're passed by Midianite. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph unto Egypt.
How much did the Judas silver price
there? 30. 30.
Reuben returned out of the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes.
Now you understand what happened here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reuben wasn't with the transaction. Reuben earlier had tried to get them to save his life, and so he talked him into putting him in the pit. Reuben was going to sneak back later, get him out, everything was cool. Now, you remember why Reuben did that?
Because he was in a state of repentance. Yeah, because he had a hot seat.
He was in a state of repentance. Now, Judah here, we're going to see chapter 38 shouldn't be here. Chapter 38 should be chapter 34. Because it's the sons of Judah. We're going to see Judah really screws up. But yet, it's through this, he goes out and makes with a prostitute, and does all kinds of stuff, but it's through that weird line that the Messiah comes. So Judah, he's always into the action, but he's really doing here, he's in this struggle for the birthright versus the scepter. Okay?
And
we're going to see in a minute, in a little while, we're going to see how that Joseph and his family and their tribe are going to become the pharaohs of Egypt for the next long time. They're called, in history, they're the mystery people. Nobody knows who they are.
Shepherd Kings.
The Shepherd Kings. Remember what they were?
Hiscos.
The Hiscos. And what happens now is there's going to be two exoduses. When a pharaoh arises that knew not Moses, what that means is, and we're going to see that when we get to Exodus, It's a situation in which the southern kingdom of, remember, it's Egypt is a dual kingdom.
Yes.
It's the north, upper and lower. Well, this, the Judah and his family became the pharaohs.
Judah.
Judah overthrew Joseph here in a minute. We're going to see. But Judah became the pharaohs, and this dynasty down here finally got sick of these weirdos having overthrew, and so they overthrew Judah. And Judah then escaped, and the royal families. And they became, all the kings and the princes of all the city-states in Egypt. Now, this isn't what's taught in history in Western, because we've westernized it, but this is what's taught in history. And if you now, That was the first Exodus. The second Exodus is the poor people who were left, the regular folks, who are now suffering because all of the Egyptians had suffered under the earlier pharaohs, the Hyksos dynasty. And these were the descendants of the Hyksos. So you got to keep this in mind. It's not just, you got to make it come alive for you. You don't misunderstand it. Okay? Does everybody understand that?
I'll accept where you said that he's trying to make grasp either the birthright or the scepter.
Well, there's... Go to Genesis 4. Keep your hand where we are. Go to Genesis 49. Say, Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion. And as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? The scepter, and the scepter is the right to rule. That's what that means. And here, if you have the scepter, you would have been Pharaoh. Now what happened, Joseph was in fact the second Pharaoh. Joseph was the doppelganger. Joseph ran Egypt. And because he ran it, he elevated his family, including Judah, but Judah had the right to rule. So, as soon as then Judah became the rightful heir. Am I communicating?
Mm-hmm. Who decided that?
God.
But Joseph had the spirit. Is this right? Joseph had the spiritual rule, and Judah had the scepter kind of rule?
Okay, let me go watch.
Bowing down sheaves and stuff.
Well, that's what happened to Joseph.
Yeah, Joseph.
But it didn't happen to Joseph's sons. Judah became, took over. He took over. Hear me. There was a Pharaoh, and then there was Joseph, as we're going to see. Joseph will run all of the world. He's now what happens, Joseph's people still remain in that position.
Gotcha.
That tribe. But Judah becomes the Pharaoh.
I think confusion is just because last time we talked about it, you said that he had given Joseph, Jacob had given Joseph the birthright, and he was the chosen one because he gave him, everything. Did he transfer that over to Judah after he thought he was dead?
Let me show you. In verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. Now that Shiloh is a appellation for the Messiah. Okay? Now let's look and see what it says about Joseph. In verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode in strength. That's hard to say. His bow abode.
49, 24.
No, we're still there.
And the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. Even by the God of thy father who shall help thee, and by the Almighty who shall bless thee, with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb, the blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors. Unto the uttermost bound of the everlasting hills they shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. Now, what that means is you're going to see a dual, from now on, when they return now to the promise, when the 12 sons of Jacob return, the 12 tribes return, from the very beginning there's going to be a division. And the division is between Judah, and Judah is made up of the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin, and the tribe of Ephraim, or of Joseph, and which from now on will be called Israel. So we've got the Jews and Israel, are two different things. We've got Judah, which is Judah and Benjamin, and Israel, which came from Ephraim, which came from Joseph, which is the 10 northern tribes. And it's a constant battle because of this thing that you're questioning. That's the reason you're questioning it. You understand? Because they questioned it. It's who had the right to rule? Who had the right to do what? Was there a difference between spirit and flesh? Well, what we find out is Israel disappeared. Israel was dispersed. The only thing that was left was Judah. Judah was the protector of the line, the bloodline. Benjamin was the protector of the temple. That's all that mattered. So when the temple was built and the bloodline was protected, the 10 northern tribes lost their punt because they were just a mob. Each one of the tribes, each of the personalities of these tribes tell us a different aspect of the revelation of Christ. You can't literalize any of the parables. You understand? So now what we're going to see is this phenomenon that what we're about to study here is some of the most incredible stuff in history. And it's this view of what's about to happen to us, really. And it's seen in these 12 tribes. Okay? I'll come back. I don't know if that answers your question.
The scepter, explain the birthright. The birthright is that of Joseph. Joseph's rule versus Judah's rule. Okay.
Yeah, but it's like... Okay.
I'm going to ask a question. Does anybody ever get to see the promise?
No, because...
I mean, not even before Christ
no,
was born?
Because, no, because... The promise is only seen from afar. It's like... When you say, does anybody get to see the promise? Yes, that's not... The answer is yes. Moses saw it when he went up to the mount. Abraham saw it when he was... immediately after the thing he experienced with the horror of great darkness. Several of the prophets saw it momentarily, but they saw it, you know, and it wasn't, it's sort of like,
at a moment in time.
Yeah, sort of like we do.
Taste this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Revelation.
It's a revelation. It's the same, because the promise is always here. I mean, it's, the promise, all of the New Jerusalem is sitting here, and it's the overriding reality wherever we are, and time passes by underneath it. And so nothing in the promise is subject to time. Everything that happens in time is only for us to be tested so that we can see and be exercised that we might live in the promise. If you understand that if you went into the promise now in the condition you're in, you would die instantly. You couldn't survive. If you saw the light of God, the brilliance of God now, you would die. You couldn't survive. You would explode like an atomic bomb. Now, it doesn't, because there can't be any idolatry in this overriding reality. There's no idolatry there. There's no other value system save God Himself. There's if the slightest part of you has invested the right to your happiness in another person or another circumstance besides God, then if you went into there, if you could possibly get in there, you'd be destroyed. You would die. So this overriding reality is always there. It's always our home. We never leave it. It's just that we're being exercised in this lower realm. But this thing up here doesn't ever have anything to do with time. You understand? All men die at exactly the same instant. They all died at the cross. Now, when time has served its purpose, when the bride has finished its course, then time will be no more. The moment time is no more, then all the stuff in the lower realm goes, dissolves. Time is gone, and the only thing that's left is the New Jerusalem. And in that lower realm is what we call Hades. It's going to be gone. There won't even be a memory of it. Who raised their hand?
So you're saying that Hades is earth now?
No.
Lower realm?
No, but Hades is earth. What we can see here is time and space.
Right.
Hades is space without regard to time. It's it's the spirit, what they call it's, and then without time or space is eternity. So those three possibilities of existence, and it's only spirit that can live. It's only that which proceeded from the Father can return to the Father. And so nothing of the senses proceeded from the Father. And that's why it's so silly to talk about, oh, praise God, I'm saved. And it's just ridiculous. It's just baby talk. I mean, it's just, you can tell nobody really believes it because they have to try to go convince so many people. And they get so mad at somebody like me who makes fun of them.
I know that I'm saying.
Like that's like a kindergarten thing. Mm-hmm.
Seems like a simple I know to sum it up.
Yeah, they do.
But the point of it is, it's like I was interviewed in this national thing. What was it called?
Church Today.
Yeah.
Man Magazine.
No. it's a national radio program, and the host.
Well, I didn't say that.
The host could not comprehend what I was talking about. It was so simple. Right. I said, "Look, as long as you are the subject of your sentence, you're not saved." It just drove him up the wall. He couldn't stand it.
But what about this?
I remember the seminary guys that we used to bring. I think Doug and Rick brought them.
Is Rick's not even defend himself?
Yeah, Rick's not chasing years ago, and you know they would come in just armed with all this stuff, and they would leave. This one guy in particular, I can't remember his name, left like crying, saying, "What am I saved? Am I saved? Am I saved?" And he just couldn't get beyond. You know,
it's really sad because these are the leaders, the spiritual leaders in our country, know nothing. I mean, I've met most of them, debated a lot of them. I mean, that last time, this thing I was on the television show over here, that was just ludicrous, and they were the leaders of the spiritual leaders of this country. I was on this panel show with them. Paige Patterson was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Just turned down the opportunity to be head of Falwell.
So well, but I mean, think about it. I mean, it's really sad.
It's the blind leading the blind.
And they have to have converts to convince themselves that they believe. Do you understand?
We didn't get very far, did we?
No.
We used to spend like, I'm serious, we've been known to spend 4 months on one verse.
Yes. But we understood it. It doesn't surprise me.
And we liked it.
And we liked it. That's the way our forefathers did it. It worked for them.
And Reuben returned unto his brethren and said, "The child is not at 30. And I, whither shall I go?" And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "This have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no." And he knew it and said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces." And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted, and he said, "For I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him.
He just stop a minute. He prophesied that he would go down into the grave, into Egypt, unto his son mourning. I mean, you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. That's why I couldn't make out what he was trying to say.
Yeah, but go ahead. And the Midianites.
And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard.
Okay. Let's go to 1 Chronicles 5.
You never go there. No. So Judah is another picture of Christ, and Judah is one of the guys that sold.
Right. Judah is in the process here of doing what they're going to do in the future. Judah and Israel argue all the time and getting all kinds of crap about birthrights and law and who's going to do what to whom. First Chronicles chapter 5. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. Now that's an important concept. You understand?
What does that mean? Well,
it means that Reuben lost, he got in big trouble. And it's a picture of you. He screwed his father's concubine. One of his father's wives. Now, but it's like, again, see each of these things is another aspect. It's the birthright isn't going to be reckoned to you, the firstborn. You're the firstborn in this vessel. The birthright goes to the promise. Now, when you can get that in your head, you can begin living. You can stop being concerned about whether or not you know how to be or not.
Gotta have a point, man.
I expect you're home.
I'm glad you're
home. Larry's so evil. Larry's bad.
But it's home.
Why is that, Harry?
Because I missed him.
Huh?
Yeah.
Harry.
You mean up until I got here, you were the point man.
That's what he's saying. That's
Harry's,
what
Harry's the firstborn of bananas, isn't he?
Yeah.
We should just call him Rube for short.
Yeah, let's call him Rube.
Hey, that's Rube. Good. Rube Cube.
Hey, Rube.
Rube. Rube the Cube.
All right.
Rudy.
For Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler. But the birthright was Joseph's. That's it. See that? Yes, Dan?
Wait a minute. Now, instead of that big lengthy, you could have just... Never mind.
Like I said,
that's Trey Pleasure's man.
This is...
Huh?
This is fairly clear right here. This is...
It's small, man. It's small.
The sons, I say, of Matt... No, I didn't say that.
Oh,
the sons,
Harry.
I say, of Rube.
You know, just don't understand. Some of my father's advice was right. He told me, never be the drunkest person in a party. Never be the loudest. Always let somebody be a little bit drunker than you. A little bit louder than you.
So what is that? What are you trying to say?
He was trying to hang out with my father.
You should have listened, though.
The sons, I say, of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, were Hanok and Palu, Hezron and Carmi. Well, anyway, we just want to go through the third chapter, third verse of me. But this, it's important to understand, Reuben the firstborn, his firstborn, his, the benefits of being the firstborn were negated by a sin that was punishable by death.
Reuben and Judah, sons of Leah?
I can't remember.
Okay.
Then, the next... What was that?
She said they were...
let's go to... Back to Genesis.
Who said?
Yeah, they were.
We don't know the medium. We don't know the size of the silver. We don't know the medium of exchange. But we know that it's on purpose less than the 30 pieces. So that, I mean, it's the same phenomenon.
Right, less.
Judah sold Christ for 30 pieces of silver to go down to the pit. Here, Joseph was sold for 20 pieces of silver to go down to the pit and go down to the grave, which is Egypt. Know you not that Egypt is on fire? Know you not that all of Egypt is dead? Know you not that all of the world is dead? Know you not that all of the world is on fire? I mean, as we prepare for Passover, that's what you have to see. There's nothing in the world. You can't save the world. There's nothing redeemable in the world. The plagues will come starting tonight. From now until Passover, the plagues will come upon your household. The 10 plagues. Until all of the idolatry that's connected with Egypt is destroyed within you. And then Passover can be celebrated. Go to Ezekiel 20. It came to pass in the seventh year, in the fifth month, the tenth day of the month, that certain of the elders of Israel came to inquire of the Lord and sat before me. And came the word of the Lord unto me, saying. Now, here, every time you hear that, then came the word of the Lord unto me, saying. What that means is, the word of the Lord, and it can also be translated as the burden of the Lord. It's not talking about a bunch of stuff that comes out of your mouth. It's talking about a position. The word of the Lord, or the burden of the Lord, is the space under the wings of the cherubim sitting on the mercy seat. That's the oracle of the Lord, the burden of the Lord, the words of the Lord. You got it? Son of man, speak unto the elders of Israel and say unto them, thus saith the Lord God, are you come to inquire of me? As I live, saith the Lord God, I will not be inquired of by you. Wilt thou judge them, son of man? Wilt thou judge them? Cause them to know the abominations of their fathers. And say unto them, now this is you. You can't. You never will understand these scriptures until you understand they're talking about you. And say unto them, thus saith the Lord God, in the day when I chose Israel and lifted up mine hand unto the seed of the house of Jacob and made myself known unto them in the land of Egypt. He made himself known unto us in the world, in Dallas. When I lifted up mine hand unto them, saying, I am the Lord your God, in the day that I lifted up my hand unto them to bring them forth of the land of Egypt unto a land that I had espied for them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Then said I unto them, cast you away, every man, the abominations of his eyes, and defile not yourselves with the idols of the world, or the idols of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now we're going to find out when we study the plagues that you'll find out how comfortable you would have been with this Egyptian religion. It was real clean. Nothing could defile it. It was orderly and clean, and people behaved themselves, and they were reasonable.
Like Herod, orderly.
Orderly.
Didn't interrupt. Dressed it.
Right. Dressed properly. Orderly children. Didn't have any drug addicts. Didn't have any alcoholics. Okay. Then I said unto them, cast you away, every man, the abomination of his eyes, and defile not yourselves with the idols of Egypt. You got to see that every value system that you have, everything that you think is right, is an idol of the world. Anything that causes you to be in a position that does not permit you to abandon yourself completely to the next moment, to tomorrow, take no thought for your life, is an idol of the world, is an idol of Egypt that you are defiling yourself with, and you're trying to worship God in that idolatry, and it cannot happen. It cannot work any longer. It's got to stop. All your little value systems of the way things should be, and the way emotionally you think things should be and others should be, even the way you think you should be. Consider the possibility that everything that you have ever believed and everything you have ever known is wrong. Then you can start the process. Anyway, defile not yourselves with the idols of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. But they rebelled against me and would not hearken unto me. They did not every man cast away the abominations of their eyes, neither did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. But I wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted before the heathen among whom they were in whose sight I made myself known unto them in the bringing from forth out of the land of Egypt. Now, what you have to understand is that all of the plagues came against Egypt, which destroyed the land of Egypt. Not because the Egyptians were bad guys. The Egyptians were nothing. They were destroyed in order to cause Israel to stop worshiping their idols. Do you understand that? This is so important. You don't understand it?
No.
Okay. Whether or not there were 43,565 innocent little babies in Memphis that were destroyed by the plague of frogs was absolutely meaningless to God. The plague of frogs had to come on, the plague of flies had to come on, the plague of blood had to come on, and all the firstborn of of Egypt had to be destroyed. Not because of anything that Egypt had done, not because of anything Pharaoh had done, but because it was necessary for that to take place to destroy the idols that were in Israel. There's no such thing as justice here. There's no such thing as God being, oh, God's sweet and nice. God, from the Egyptian standpoint, God is the worst ogre on the face of the earth. He's the worst demon there ever was. He's an angel of death. Don't buy the lies of a humanitarian God. There's nothing in the scriptures that justify that. And God will kill everyone in your family. He'll kill your dog. He'll wipe out everybody around you to protect the seed within you. And that's the fear of God. You understand that?
Didn't you say that the seed was in every man?
That we just sows the seed in every pecan tree. But he doesn't care about the one except the one that falls into the ground and dies. He doesn't care about the one that's outside trying to polish the pecan shell. Oh, I'm a nice pecan shell. I'm a Baptist. I'm a Christian. I'm a this.
So what happens to the seed within the man who's trying to polish the shell?
What happens to the sperm cells that are shed all over the nations? Nothing. It's as though they never existed.
But I thought spirit always lived.
Spirit only lives when it's activated. Potentiality for life is given to every man. Read 1 John. Read the Gospel of John. It says, what does it say? I'll show you. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness for the light, or of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world knew him not. The world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. The word power there is not the word like that comes from dynamite. It's the word that means ability or efficacy. To every man he gave the efficacy, the potentiality to become the son of God. If they picked up the cross. That's the only way. That's why through the preaching of the cross is the only way. The death of self is the only way.
be transformed by the renewing of your mind is the only way.
But there's only one son of God. Only one son.
And that's the life that's within you. Okay? But I mean, I'm serious. You cannot study the Old Testament. And you can't look at history with an objective view. You can't look at life today with an objective view. And believe the fairy tales that you still believe about God.
A better hospital.
Okay. Back to his Genesis. Nothing is said about Reuben and the part that he played in any subsequent actions. He wasn't rewarded for anything in the future. He's not going to get any real... he's not going to get any goodies for what he tried to do here. For some reason, it was meaningless. In other words, his sincerity wasn't rewarded. That's the point I want to get to.
Well, I mean, he never really told his father at the beginning of it, though. He never really complains that they saw him. Did he know?
I don't know. We don't know. There's no evidence to say that he knew what the other brothers had done. Now, we're going to see Joseph now. Let's just see if we can get a little preview of what's going to happen. Joseph is sold to Potiphar. Potiphar isn't a name, it's a title, and it's like... He's a biggie. He's a heavy dude in the Pharaoh's house. In that position, something had to have transpired in Joseph before the act of being sold had occurred for him to have the mindset that he had while he was in Egypt. Consider what he was. He was the son of a royal family in his land. He had been raised with the best that he knew. He had been If we believe he had been given the wisdom of Adam, passed on to Seth, passed on to Abraham, all of the wisdom of life had been given unto Joseph. He was his father's favorite. The scriptures say he was like, and you'll see why in a minute when he gets. But he was supposed to be incredibly good-looking, incredibly handsome. He gets sold as a slave, and what's his response? There's not one indicator in the scriptures that he ever rebelled against that moment. In other words, he never once said, but wait a minute, you don't understand. What he did was he saw that every single act that came into his life was an act from the hand of God, and he gave himself to that moment, totally and completely. Now, that's what it means to believe. There's no evidence that he ever once rebelled against the slightest authority. There's no evidence that he ever once complained about any situation that he found himself in. There's no evidence that he ever kicked against the authority of the various things that took place, even to the extent when he was put into prison in a couple more chapters because he was accused of having an affair with this guy's wife. In every place he went, he saw that he was there by the hand of God in every condition he found himself in. He found himself there by the hand of God. There was never murmuring. There was never complaining. He was the type of being in whatsoever state he found himself therewith, he was content. And from that position, God elevated him from the slave to the ruler. And something had to transpire. Some action had to take place in those around him. Something had to be recognized. Something was seen. And if you dismiss it as being something supernatural or something miraculous, then you'll never understand the lesson of Joseph. The lesson of Joseph was that you must see yourself as Joseph. And you must see the evil of the complaints. You must see the evil of the con. You must see the evil of the merchandising. You must see the evil of the respecter of persons. Every indicator is that he responded to his fellow slaves the same way he responded to the Pharaoh. There was no difference. Didn't matter whether he was in the palaces or in the dungeon, he responded equally the same to the people around him. That's the walk of Christ seen in Joseph. Understand that? He didn't have any causes. He didn't have any agendas. Now, that's simply called faith. Go to 1 John. No. That's enough. I want to wait and study this. There's some incredible stuff here about faith, what faith really is, instead of this commodity crap that... But this is a good place to stop. Let's do one of the readings for the Haftarah. It is Jeremiah 38. Is there somebody that's holding something in? It seems like there's a...
Tuesday night, you said, well, we've got a big deal, we're going to close tomorrow.
Yeah, well...
Well, evidently it didn't, because we didn't hear about it. Right?
Well, it's close. It's not very...
But, I mean, I just overwhelmingly feel...
It goes, that's what it is about our business, it goes up and down. People make commitments, and then they back out of them. And it's just the nature of our business.
You're up and down.
Yeah, but I'll let that take me out of the rest, and I should. I should just forget it and not give it any breath and not worry about it.
Yeah, but you can't say that once you've already gotten yourself into the roller coaster. You have to get off the roller coaster. I mean, you are consumed by the concerns of mortgages and food and telephones. And I mean, so let it go. Don't live the lie anymore. I mean,
and the lie includes
that there's going to be a deal tomorrow that's going to make it all okay.
Which would probably be the worst thing possible to happen.
I mean, hear me. I had to lose everything including for my reputation, my friends. I'm not saying you're going to have to do that. I don't know. But I know that it hurts me to see you try to keep pumping energy into this thing.
It's a dual thing. It's, you say just do what's in front of you with all your might. And I do that. I just get up down that day and I do what's in front of me with all my might.
And that's fine.
But some days I find myself not doing this. Like I don't live in the gutter, like you said, I don't live in the gutter, but I go back there every now and then. Some days I find myself going back there.
Okay, but hear me. Can you understand that what you're trying to support a lifestyle that's a lie?
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between bailing out a boat that's got a leak and going down with the ship. Know what I mean? I mean, if it's sinking, if God's coming, it's to go.
Well, I'm not, and it doesn't, we're not even talking about the business or the job or possible contracts. We're talking about the debt. Well,
it's not the flushing down the debt, it's not bankruptcy, it's not the state of business, it's the fact that I, in my mind, find myself worrying about those things, about taking fall for tomorrow.
Well, it's more than that, because like, up until a week ago, I thought you were doing okay. Now I find out so far from being okay, they're about to take your house away. I wish you're doing bad. I wish you're doing okay. It's just odd to me that I hear this, ship hitting the reef here. Everything I've been hearing before was clear sailing. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, I think you got delineated by a lot of stuff that we never hear about.
Yeah, you never talk about it.
That's what it is. Bear me out, it changes so radically.
That's what's important about it.
But see, I know that I was a deal maker. I know the world of dealing. The world of dealing is, and we didn't look at it, was the world of the Midianites. That's where the word comes from. Midian. But, and I'm not asking you to be, to change or to do something different or do this or do that or do that. All I'm asking you to do is to, You may not recognize what you do, but you've been around here a long, long time, and no one here except for me and Mike probably, I'm sure I don't know if Sherry knew or not, but knew the condition that you're in, from a financial standpoint, it's always that you will be the big brother that takes care of things, and you will bring this, and you'll pay for that, and it's almost like a drug that you feel like you have to do this and you have to sustain this for.
But I don't feel that way anymore.
Well,
I really don't.
But hear me, that's the impression you give.
Yeah, it's like an act that's portrayed of, big book for net or whatever.
If that's not the case, what would you be concerned about? What are you concerned about? There are things that you have that you don't want to lose. You're afraid you're going to lose
it. Let me give you a couple, an easy example. In 1963, in the fall of 63, I met Harry. I'd met him a long time before that, 1983. And Harry was driving a new Cadillac, and he also had a Corvette. And he lived on the 28th floor of Preston Towers with You know, you go up in and go through it, and you look like he would look like he was a millionaire. And for a long time, I didn't know what his status was, but he got a kick out of it. Every time we went out to eat, he'd buy me a steak, or he'd pick up the tab and put it in a credit card. And it was like and it went on and on and on for months, up until, I guess we had the first, up until January of 84. But anyway, I had no understanding. I mean, you know, I didn't want my business to get into his business, but all of that time, everything he was doing was air. And he was trying to paint air. He was trying to, and he would dress up and get on his little suit and get on his little loafers and have his little briefcase, and he'd scurry around. And it was like, you know, I mean, I tried to bust him. I wouldn't ride in his Corvette. I mean, it's like, because I knew he was a lie. Now, your situation is not the same, but there's some similarities between Harry in 83 and you today. Harry was, you know, it's where he got his self-worth, and it's where you get your self-worth. And the self-worth has to come exclusively from Christ. I mean, you're so afraid to show weakness that it's all put off. It's all delayed things. I mean,
it's like charged on the spiritual good feeling credit card.
But
the truth is, you would delay it now if you had that.
It's like, I want you to be free, and I know you want to be free. I mean, how can you be in this position? I mean, where you've got to know the evil of debt. I mean, God's telling you something.
Well, I hear what he's telling me. And, you know, there's no doubt that I've decided to take bankruptcy, and I've walked away from those things, and I don't put on my little act and go and try to make things out of air. I just go do my job. And the fortunate thing about the business we're in is that you can walk away from all your debt and take bankruptcy one day, and 2 weeks later, you know, you can have $50,000 in your pocket on one or two deals. And that's where we are. And those deals are probably most of them close tomorrow, but one big one will, and the others will probably come after. And, it's, you know, that's just my job. That's what I do. And I don't go about it the way that I went about it 2 months ago or 3 months ago. And I've already given up all the things that I have or would have or used to have. I just go do my job.
That's not what you said.
What did I say? What are you talking about?
Well, you said that you worry about things, and I wouldn't have the insight or the vantage point of being able to say this on Monday. But because it takes me, I can see that what you're worried about losing are your things, like your house. And, I mean, I wouldn't want to lose my house, but Mike said to me, well, I think we should buy another Suburban. I mean, that way we'll always have some place to live. I thought, well, hell, you're right. We've lived in it before. Not that we were homeless, but we've traveled and lived.
But I'm telling you, I'm not worried about losing my house.
But I'm saying that you're not worried about losing your family or any kind of status there.
No, absolutely not.
Well, the other stuff is just stuff.
But you're worried about something. I mean, it's entirely different.
I mean, you may not be now. You may have slimed into that right now, but it comes upon you, and you are. I'm not going to let that slide.
We had this little discussion about the tips the other day. You still, on occasion, oh, it's just $5. It's just $10. It's nothing. You know, that kind of stuff. That's the old Burnett.
But when? When? Does that happen? Now, wait a minute. The reason it came up is because I put $2 on the table.
You did good that time.
That's what I'm saying. I did good. Yeah. Okay, but I said, that's what happens. And then you say, that the other half is when.
Yeah, but that's what I'm not doing it now. I mean,
Well, I'm not trying to get you. You're telling me that I do it all the time. I'm just asking you when. You haven't seen that lately. Now,
that's how much lately is.
I just feel like it's a denial of debt, whether it's $10, like my case. Because, I mean, if it's $10, then Burnett, it's debt. Whether it's $1 million, it's debt.
Well, I don't deny it. I mean, there's no denial of debt. It's debt. I'm going to bankrupt it and flush it and walk away from it.
But you're going to still continue the overhead.
Well,
I've reduced that to just about as low as you can possibly get it. I mean, the mortgage company is now, I've written them a letter, and they're agreeing to cut my payments in half and defer all the money that the 2 months I'm behind, stick it on the back of the note.
Yeah, but you haven't, here's the deal. You haven't cried, huh? And the fact is, I mean, you might as well, because I mean, it's not going to change. It isn't going to change. The reason it isn't going to change.
What do you mean by saying crap?
You haven't said, I've had enough, and nothing's changing. And I mean, what we're getting at is the reason that all this is happening and everything is for a reason. It's not like, you know, if there's a downturn or something, but you're going to bounce back. You're not going to bounce back.
Not on all the debt that I owe. But I still have to get up and go do my job and go to work and do the best I can do, just like you do or Rick does or Mike or anybody
else
does.
There's more than that, there's a purpose behind all this.
And I realize the purpose, and it's served its purpose.
You know, I find myself hoping that none of these deals close because that's what's best for you.
Why do I feel that way? Well, then if they don't, and then you know, you still got to get out of bed and go do your job. If those deals don't,
that's
got to.
Let's see, Burnett, you keep, that's you keep saying it's almost a religious kind of my job. That's my job. That's my job. It's like a country and western song or something. I mean, what are you talking about?
It's
what I
do.
It's my job.
What is that? What you do is right or wrong or good or bad.
Like defines me or something?
I can't talk to two people at once.
I know.
Which one of you do you want me to talk to?
Well, I'd like to talk to you.
Okay, well then sure, you have to let
out.
We love you. Okay.
You keep saying, you have said over and over the last 10 minutes, it's my job.
Right.
It's my job. It's what I do. I mean, it sounds strange.
Well, it's not any different, Harry, than if you get up tomorrow, you know what you're going to do.
No, I have no idea what I'm going to do.
Right.
I have no idea what I'm going to do.
I can witness to that.
But you go do certain things.
No.
I go to the office and I do what's there to do.
But let me tell you what has taken place on several occasions. Every time Harry got into do mode, I fired him. I mean, he had to go sit alone and be at Matt and Jackie's. Or every time that he began to believe that his identity or his function or purpose was tied up in what he did, I fired him.
I really don't believe my identity, my purpose is tied up in what I do. If I don't do that, I got to do something else.
Well, I really do have an empathy for you and for what you're going through. I'm not saying I understand all of it, but I have an empathy for it, okay? And I can tell you this. You got two little girls that need to have some clothes, not very many clothes, and a little bit of food every week. You got a wife that needs a little bit of food every week. You need a little bit of food every week. You need a roof over your head. Maybe you need some gas in one of your vehicles. Other than that, you don't need shit. And you're killing yourself to live up to something, whether you call it my job, my holy grail, my assignment, whatever it is, you're killing yourself, and everybody in the room knows it. And you don't have to do that. Your partner is sitting right there telling you that. I mean, it's real obvious.
Mine doesn't do anything different than I do. We both are in the same business.
Well, but he doesn't have the same kind of makeup you do. His bag is a different deal.
Mike, are you in foreclosure?
No.
There's a little bit of a difference.
Well, that comes from my background, and it's totally different than what his is.
I don't know that it's so much the job that people are trying to, the perceiving that people are trying to change. It's not the job. It's not what you do. It's that when you get up in the morning and you you put on your clothes and you go to work. They're just saying, don't carry all the baggage of the idolatry with you. You are more than what you do with them in God's eyes. Don't think that what you are is what you produce and what you create as income.
I don't believe that.
Then you shouldn't be worried if you're not carrying that baggage along with you. You get up in the morning. Go and do what you do and do it to the glory of God and do it to the best you can. But just don't carry along the idolatry.
Well, again, the words don't, I mean, there's a thousand words that can, and these kind of situations, they don't communicate. The only thing that can communicate to you at this point is the evil of debt. Not, it doesn't matter whether it's a million, it doesn't matter whether you borrow 10,000 to make it to the next deal, it doesn't matter whether you borrow a dollar to have a cup of coffee. It's that God has said that going into debt is illegal under his system. What he says is if you choose to go into debt, then he has to, by definition, take his hands off of you. And he has to let your own worst fears come upon you. You are in a position where you are going into more and more debt daily. I know that. It's a fool's paradise and a fool's protection. It's illegal, and the prayers to God are illegal when you are in that domain. You are operating in the curse and asking God to bless it. Does that communicate? Mm-hmm. Okay. There's only one way out. And that's the determination to, above all things, as of this moment in time, say, I will never again borrow another dime. Now, that then will cause, that will be its own dynamic. It will force all kinds of things to happen that can't be predicted.
You probably won't like
him. Well, you may like him. The point is that, I mean, that's, all these other words don't communicate because that's not where your head's at. There, I mean, tomorrow you could move in across the street if nowhere else because we had to rent that house for a month. I mean, there's other options, but it's like you are bringing into the kingdom the idolatry of Egypt that we just read about. And that idolatry says, the main idolatry, it's the main one there is in that world, is that, I'll show you what it is. Social evolution. It's the thing that's driving the engine of the universe. And it says that things will get better tomorrow. That is the main lie, and it takes as many forms as there are. In relationships, it takes the form of a lie. In your business, and hear me, I was in your business. I made deal after deal after deal. I know that thought process. That thought process is the engine that drives Dallas. That tomorrow the deal is going to come through and I'll just take a draw against that. That is debt.
I'll grant that.
Okay.
Okay, now listen. Wherefore, hear the word of the Lord, you scornful men. Because you have said, we have made a covenant with death and with hell, are we at agreement?
Mm.
When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us. For we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. The covenant with death is the belief system that it's going to get better tomorrow.
I don't believe it's going to get better tomorrow in that aspect.
You believe it's going to get better tomorrow because you believe a deal is going to come to pass.
Ernie,
true.
Your motto is drill or die.
Well, it doesn't matter. That point, with hell, are you at agreement? Can you hear that? Can you accept that as a possibility? Yes. And that everything you do is passed through that doctrine of creative consistency. You lie to yourself so that it meets that imagery. You just did it tonight. I'm asking you, no, I'm begging you, for your sake, to consider that tomorrow, if you have to borrow a dime for a cup of coffee, don't drink the coffee. If you have to borrow a nickel to turn the phone on, don't turn the phone on. If you have to borrow a 5 cents to put gas in the car to go to a deal, don't put gas in the car. You're never judged by what you don't have. You're judged by the faithfulness of what you have in your hand without going into debt. Now, none of this makes any sense unless you hear it.
It makes sense to me.
But if
I look at my situation, I look and I say, 3 months ago when I did not have to go into debt, I did have the money to operate on my own. The deals weren't ready to go. And I waited that 3 months in coming. When they finally come, I'm out of money. And I'm waiting on him to finish them up.
Okay, well, I'm just saying to you that and then you are waiting on conditions that, I mean, hear me. It doesn't matter what I say. Unless it responds on something, it's not going to be operated on.
It does. And Mike and I have to sit and talk.
I mean, no, you do. And I mean, this has to be addressed by everybody here because every year at this time, maybe in January, we all go through the asset tithe, we all go through the first fruit offering. And these are the questions that are addressed. This is like the short grass of the asset tithe. It's a little short grass. Pretty soon we'll get some
big grass.
Short grass. But it's like preliminary short grass. Stubble. Getting into the stubble so that we can. I'm not your enemy.
I know that.
You're on the mower.
I was just talking the other day. I was talking to this guy doing the story at home, and so it's fresh in my mind. But for at least 12 months, maybe 18 months, maybe 24, but at least 12 months, my partners and I kept our company going long after we should have declared bankruptcy. We did it on other people's money. And we did it because tomorrow this was going to happen. Next month we're going to get this contract. This thing will fund and this will happen. We kept that up. Kept the staff on, like 12 people. Paid them every week, but didn't make the deposit for their taxes. We didn't put them, because it was going to happen. We were going to get the money, and when we did, boy, then we'd pay it and then it would be. Every Sunday, every Sunday, twice, and every Wednesday, once, I went to Word of Faith. And I listened to Robert Tilton tell me that it was my test of faith. And it jived perfectly with what my high school football coach told me, and what my father told me, and everything I ever read told me was to be an American male, was to meet the test, was to hang in there when the going got tough, the tough got going, keep the faith,
etc., etc., etc. Well, let me tell you what had to happen in his case. They had a money man. Everybody's got a money man. And in the deal world, there's always a money man. I mean, I knew so many money men that I can't even tell you how many money men I know. In his world, there was a money man. You know what happened to that money man? God caused him to commit suicide. So that Harry would hear. so that their deal would fall through.
Blew his head off.
I mean, this isn't light matters. The obedience of faith is everything. Okay. I beg of you, I hope you do, because you understand from God's standpoint, money is less than nothing. I mean, you understand that we, for now, for 20 years, we have operated with no deals, with no sustained income, with no debt. What we've operated on the basis that, you know, I made mistakes. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I did anything perfect. But we've operated on the basis that if we have the money, we'll do something. If we don't have the money, we won't do something. Because money then is spiritualized. And now all kinds of weird stuff is happening. I mean, people are walking off the street giving us $900 or $450. I mean, I don't even know where it's coming from. We don't have any abundance. We're still spending a lot because there's all these damn homeless people. I'm just going to just ship them all out somewhere to do a shelter and get a couple hundred thousand. Huh?
Make them all get paying jobs.
But anyway, and something else is happening. I just hope you can hear how evil that is.
I can. I know firsthand.
Okay.
It's going like this to God. I mean, he's got you. He's got you where he wants you. And he's doing something. And you're kicking and screaming and saying, no, I'm going to do every damn thing I can to keep you from doing what you want to do. It's really stupid. Because what he's doing is a hell of a lot better than you could ever do. It doesn't feel that way. It doesn't look that way, maybe. But I guarantee it's true.
Well, from all of us, or I mean, from everybody, it doesn't matter whether it's $100 in debt or five.
You can't have my credit card. You can't have it. No.
I don't want your credit card. Or $500 in debt, or $500,000, or whatever it is. Or nickel.
Huh? At the end of the month.
You pay it at the end of the month. So there's no interest charge.
But if you don't pay it up at the end of the month,
then you cut it up.
Then you take and cut it up.
Card again, are you?
Huh? Are you in debt? Yeah.
See, it's just cut it up.
Because I just don't pay it.
Cut it up.
Well, I cut it up. That's crazy.
We already had this argument.
See, Burnett, this roller boy isn't for you anyway.
It's crazy. It's just.
I don't know what the repercussions are, but, you know, for the past 5 or 6 years, whatever it's been that I've been here, you've been talking about this depression. And I'm watching it come to pass. I mean, I turned on the news tonight. I've been listening to the radio as I drive. Everything is talking about recession, and there's no answer. The debt is too great. There is no way out.
Yeah. In every other time in history, there's an interesting concept that by strength of character, by hard work, by intelligence, by guile, by cunning, and every other time in history, we've been able to get out of this, get out of your personal debt. And that's what God has done now. God has put us in a position where no matter what you do, you can't beat the system.
The average man knows that.
I mean, just think of these. There's 3,700 workers at Arlington that have sacrificed. They've done innovative things. There's more productivity there than any other plant in GM. And then there's about another 6,000 or 7,000 people of the ancillary folks. They're all going to lose their jobs.
Yeah, a total of, what, 25,000, 30,000 people total in GM.
When I interviewed yesterday, the guy asked me what I'd made in my last job, and he paled. And he goes, you know there's a recession going on. I mean, you know, because obviously it's affected radio, and I can see it. You know, I see all that.
But again, from our standpoint here, and this is, I believe God is delaying things. I mean, we should be in a recession a long time ago, or depression. And every time in throughout history,